Jim Taylor back on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Get a chance to visit with an IHSA administrator, the one that's in charge of the baseball. That's Sam Knox. And I know some of my ag reporting I've done this week. We have adequate soil moisture levels for much of the state of Illinois heading into the spring planting season. So that means beginning next week on Monday, March the 19th, we need daytime highs in the 60s to lower 70s and nighttime lows maybe in the 40s to the 50s, wishful thinking, and no rain so we can get some games in early in the season. You would probably agree to that, right?
I agree, Jim. I think there'd be a lot of teams in Illinois who like that forecast, but it is Illinois. It's still March, and we'll see if we can play some baseball next week.
Yeah, I know. We want to get into the meat of our conversation about the pitch count rule that went into effect within the IHSA last year. You know, I guess a perfect segue, kind of talking about the spring sports season and baseball practice. The first official day of practice was February the 26th, I think, that Monday. And, you know, we worry about weather early in the season, specifically in the north half of the state. Do you think, or would you ever envision that the baseball and or softball schedule could be modified and pushed back, or is that something that just could never happen?
Well, that's a great question. A lot of people have raised that lately. Just, again, because of the pitching restrictions now in baseball, and people have said, well, why don't we just push the whole season back, you know, 2 or 3 weeks? Well, that sounds great, but when you start looking at the calendar and you say, well, pushing the season back 2 weeks means we'll be having our state finals in late or the end of June, and that gets into people's summers, and it would just, I'm not saying it's impossible, but would it just be so different than what we've normally done that I think a lot of people would be pretty resistant to that. Although, you know, up in your area, the state of Iowa, just across the river, plays a lot of their baseball, softball in the summer anyway. So there's a model there that we could possibly copy off of. But for right now, we'll go with state finals the first two weekends in June.
Now, would that take, is that a bylaw amendment issue if someone would want to introduce that to, say, push the schedule back? Now, this is just me speaking. If Jim Taylor was in charge of the IHSA for one day, oh, gosh, wait. I would say let's move it back almost a month. And my only debate on it is, and this is just me speaking, is that June, the month of June, basically has become an unofficial season because of the 25 contact days. So you have a lot of the basketball and football stuff going on in the month of June. So would it really be that much of an issue to play baseball in the month of June when, in my opinion, at least in this part of the state, the optimum weather months are June, I think, and then I think, you know, basically the month of September when football is played is an optimum weather month. So that's what I look at. Is it a bylaw amendment issue if somebody would want to propose something like that, or is that something that would actually have to come from the IHSA offices in Bloomington?
Yeah, good question. It is a bylaw. All of our season limitations are spelled out in our bylaws, you know, what the first start date is for practices and when the season ends, and those are all in bylaws. So if schools were interested in proposing something different, they could certainly do that, and then it would be up to our membership to vote on that during the normal voting process in the fall. So it's not, again, not an impossibility, but like you said, there are a lot of factors in play. June has kind of, like you said, become almost the unofficial summer basketball month, and July has almost become the summer football month with the 25 contact days. I won't say it's impossible. It would just take the support of our membership to make that happen.
All right. And, you know, I know each sport or activity has an advisory committee. I should read those minutes more closely. Has that ever been a discussion item for the advisory committee that you know of?
In the 2 years I've been here, it hasn't, but I'm sure it's come up in the past. I know that, you know, just starting the season this time of year is always challenging just because of the weather, and some days you might be playing when it's 55 degrees, and the very next day you've got 2 inches of snow on the ground. So, again, it's just we live in Illinois. We have to get used to the weather changes, but I think another issue that schools face is that baseball softball starts practice in late February when many teams are still going in the boys' basketball season. And that overlap there of the spring sports starting and the winter sports wrapping up creates some challenges at those schools, too, not only for kids on those teams and trying to balance all everything, but also gym space and indoor practice time and who gets the gym and who goes late and who's practicing until, you know, 9, 10 o'clock at night just to get practices in. So it's a challenge no matter how we do it. But, you know, what you say about pushing the season back makes some sense in some regard, but it would be a major shift from what we've traditionally done.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, I look at for my motivation is it alleviates some of the indoor concerns. And, you know, I look at what we're dealing with in our area, you know, basically kind of every, you know, transition from winter into spring here is you just can't get outdoors, and you're basically going from practicing indoors for 2.5, maybe to 3 weeks to actually then being forced to play your very first game outdoors without, you know, any preparation outdoors, which I think is a detriment to the sport. And then the conditions in the spring that you play in, I think that hurts the promotion of the sport a little bit too. And that's one of my motivations where I look at potentially, you know, let's take a look at possibly pushing the season back a little bit. And then I think the other motivating factor, and that's what, you know, I got off the beaten track here a little bit, but you know, our conversation is about the pitch count issue. And I know in small school baseball, you know, there are exceptions where you have deep pitching staffs. But the rule primarily in small school baseball, you don't have deep pitching staffs. You don't have that luxury. So if you have to backload your schedule with postponements, that, in my opinion, also kind of is a little bit of a detriment to the game. You know, just when I'm talking about those examples where schools don't have a lot of pitching and they're forced to put kids out there that aren't ready to pitch, and that results in long games, maybe lopsided scores, things of that nature.
Yeah, some of the feedback we heard last year going through this for the very first time was that schools were getting to those points of the season where they'd had some rainouts, and traditionally you fill those rainout games in wherever you have an open date on the calendar, and sometimes that means you look at your schedule in late April, early May, and suddenly you've got four or five games in 1 week and a doubleheader on Saturday, and teams are going, whoa, timeout. We can't do this because we only have two or three pitchers on our varsity team. So I think schools learn quickly that they have to be very careful with how they schedule and careful with how they reschedule after rainouts or weather postponements. And the traditional Saturday doubleheader might be changing as we move forward, where maybe you just play a varsity game and a JV game on a Saturday as opposed to two varsity games and two JV games because you simply don't have enough pitching, especially if you pitch two or three guys on a Saturday doubleheader and then turn around and have to play a conference game on Monday or Tuesday, and you're down to your, you know, number four or five pitcher in a key conference game, and nobody really wants to be in that position. So it has certainly changed the landscape of baseball. Many people have argued for the better. Most coaches were very supportive last year of the changes, and once we got into the season and they saw how things were going to play out, I had a lot of great feedback from coaches saying, Sam, this was a really good move. It's going to change. It's going to take us a while to get used to some of these unique issues, but we're happy with the changes.
Yeah, and I always forget. So you're allowed max how many games? I'm talking about varsity schedule during the regular. Is it 31 or how many max games are you given in baseball?
35.
And that's why maybe schools need to dial it down a little bit. So the modification this year is it'll stay 105. Basically, the pitch count, the top end is 105. And then a four-day rest after that during the regular season. And they modified that to 115 for the postseason, then 4 days of rest. And you know, I think there was a little bit of confusion. We were talking about this off the air, that if you reach 115 in the postseason and it's in the middle of an at-bat, the coach has that opportunity to finish that at-bat, whether the batter walks, strikes out, gets a hit, or whatever.
That's correct. And the rule has always been that way. for example, a pitcher starts a batter and he, let's say it's a regional or a sectional game, and he's on 113 pitches. He starts a batter. He does not have to come out when he hits 115. He can finish that batter, and if he goes to 116, 117, 118 before he gets that batter out, then when the batter's out, he has to be removed from the game. And we had a unique situation. It was funny last year in the 2A state championship game between Tutopolis and St. Joseph Ogden. Tutopolis won the game. I forget the score, but it was the seventh inning. Their pitcher had pitched the entire game, and we had a guy up in the score booth keeping track of pitches. And he radioed down to me with one out in the seventh inning. He said, "Sam, this guy is on 104. Okay. Well, the coach goes out to talk to the player, one out, runner on first. He talks to the pitcher and leaves the kid in. A couple pitches later, batter hits a ground ball to shortstop. They turn a double play, and they win the state championship. So when we're in line to give out the medals and the trophies, I said, "Coach, I got to ask you something, because this is the first time we've gone through this. What number did you have your guy on in the seventh inning?" He said, "Well, we had him on 104. Okay, good. That's the same number we had. I said, "Well, I'm curious. What did you tell him?" He said, "I told him, if you want to record a complete game in the state championship, you better get a ground ball double play right now, because then I have to take you out." And he did, and they won the state championship, and that was a funny story. But yeah.
So every coach needs to say that now.
Yeah, every coach needs to say, get as many ground ball double plays as you can so we're more efficient. But, he knew that he would have to take that pitcher out in the state championship game, and he didn't want to do that. So the kid got done what the coach asked him to do, but that was kind of a funny story from the first pitch count season.
Yeah, and I know it's kind of a self-reporting, self-policing type of thing where each team charts their pitches, charts the opposing team pitches. I think they get together every two innings with the umpire and basically confirm, and then if there's a difference, basically they split the difference. And then all that data is reported to the clearinghouse at the IHSA. I just wonder, how did all that go last year? That seems like a lot of data that has to be stored in a clearinghouse.
It is a lot of data, because we not only ask coaches or require coaches for varsity games, we require it for all games, freshman, JV, sophomore, varsity. Every game that's played, we require the coaches to report those numbers. And our tech person, Scott Johnson, developed a system where coaches plug in the numbers. If we had a baseball game today and Jim Taylor threw 57 pitches and Sam Knox threw 38 pitches, the coach would put those in the system, and when he hits the enter or the submit button, it then tells the coach what Jim Taylor can do over the next 6 days and what Sam Knox can do over the next 6 days. So the coach doesn't have to sit down with that piece of paper chart and figure it out himself. Okay, Jim pitched 57, so he has to. There's no guesswork to it. The system tells the coach what the kid can do, what days he has to rest, what days he can come back, how many pitches he can throw, et cetera. And the coaches overwhelmingly said, that is a great system. So I'll give all the credit to Scott. He developed that. He's the whiz behind the technology of our website. And the coaches really like that, because there was no guessing. There was no worrying if I get this wrong. They're going to go exactly by what Scott's program tells them. So that was a really positive step in the first season.
All right. So the example that you had given, let's say, you said, I think I threw 57 pitches, but let's say I only, the way the limitations were set up that week, I could only throw 51, and I threw 57, and there was a reporting issue or there was some type of mistake. What is the penalty, in what type of issues or what type of penalties were rendered in all that last year, if you know or you have that information?
Yeah, we wanted it to be a completely transparent system. So one other feature of this is that any coach in the state can look at any other team's data in the entire state. So if Mercer County is getting ready to play Orion, they can go in and look at Orion's data they've entered over the last several games and see which pitchers have pitched. And they may not be able to know which pitcher is going to pitch against them, but they can definitely tell which pitchers are not going to pitch against them, because they have to rest those days. So that's what the coaches like, too, that they could go in and see their next opponents and make sure that, you know, everybody's entering the data like they're supposed to. But back to your question of the consequences. We found a few, and coaches reported. Many of them were self-reported. Some of them were opponent-reported, where a pitcher pitched too many pitches. He was not eligible to pitch. Therefore, like any other ineligible player, the team forfeited that game, whether it was a freshman game or a varsity game. And it was unfortunate, but we knew that if we didn't follow through that way with consequences, then the rule isn't going to mean as much as it needs to mean, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
If we just kind of said, well, okay, that's okay. If he threw two extra pitches he wasn't supposed to, just don't do that again. Well, the word would quickly spread that there's no teeth in that rule. So there were a few teams that had to forfeit baseball games last spring because their pitcher might have thrown just one or two pitches over the limit. And most of those cases, because it was a brand new thing for everybody, it was simply a coach saying, oh my gosh, it's my fault. I misunderstood. I thought he could pitch. It's totally my fault. It won't happen again. Well, you know, the forfeit's going to happen. We know that. Lesson learned. We'll move on. So it was so new that many people just simply misunderstood what was happening. So you have that with anything new, and I think this is the second year of it. It'll be even smoother this year.
Did you have to render any penalties in the postseason at all last year, or that was just regular season stuff?
Yeah, unfortunately, there was one situation where in a regional championship game,
oh man,
a pitcher pitched well beyond the limit. I'm not talking just a handful of pitches. He pitched well beyond the 105 limit. If I remember right, he was up in the 120s, I think.
Holy smokes.
And the other team said, whoa, hold on a second. He was supposed to come out at 105, and then unfortunately we had a situation in a regional championship where a team had to forfeit that regional championship.
And then you bring up the other component, the umpires. How have they adapted and embraced all this? I know there had to be a little bit of a learning curve, I would think, going into this last spring.
There was, and actually we took it completely out of the umpires' hands. The umpires have nothing to do with the pitch counts because they should be more worried about balls and strikes and outs and safes and all the rules in the rule book. So it's completely on the coaching staff to count the pitches and record them. And many umpires were nervous about that. What's going to be our role? Are we going to have to count pitches? What if we know that, you know, number 33 is on the mound and we know that he's over the limit? What do we do? The other coach is saying he's over the limit. What do we're not counting the pitches, so how do we know if their numbers are accurate? So just to make it easy, we took the umpires totally out of the equation, and all they have to do is call balls and strikes and outs and safes and other rule book issues. So they were relieved about that because, really, we want them focused on the rules of the game and the situations on the field and not have another clicker in their hand counting the pitches. So.
Yeah, and you, again, talking with Sam Knox with the IHSA, and we really appreciate his time. And so it's 105 during the regular season is the max pitch count. And then 115 during the postseason. I like the regular season rule. I'm still a little bit unsure about the postseason because I think, and I know the way it operates, you know, 9.9 out of 10 times the coach is always going to make the right decision, but the 0.1 time is the reason for maybe some of these rules. Was there ever any talk, Sam, of saying, let's do the pitch count during the regular season, and then basically we get to postseason, and we don't have a pitch count because basically as each game goes along, more and more teams are going to get eliminated. Has that ever been on the table about let's just keep it a regular season issue, postseason comes around, there are no restrictions? Has that ever been a point of discussion?
No, that's a good question, but no, it really wasn't. When our baseball advisory committee met with members of our sports medicine advisory committee who understand all the science and behind the human body and the limits you can throw with a baseball, there was never any talk of when we get to postseason, you know, all bets are off, you can throw as many as you want. I think because there was some concern of, well, now that the stakes are higher and it's win or go home, and we're in the sectional championship game, and our ace is on the mound, and it's a 2-2 ball game in the 10th inning, we're going to leave him in and let him throw, you know, 180 pitches because we want to win this game. And there's always a chance that would happen if you didn't have any type of pitch count restrictions in place. So, no, that was never really discussed, but was discussed certainly to extend the limit a little bit higher in the postseason simply because by that time of year a kid's arm is in better shape, he's been pitching all season, the weather's generally warmer, so he can be able to go and now he's going to be able to go 10 more pitches than he did during the regular season.
All right. Well, I think I said at the beginning of our interview, games begin March 19th, but it's March 12th, and Sam Knox, he's going to guarantee us at least, well, our first broadcast is the 15th, a Thursday in softball, and then the 19th, a Monday in baseball. So at least those 2 days, he's guaranteeing us sunny skies and 75 degrees at first pitch at 4:30. Sam, as always, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Thanks for all you do for covering all of our IHSA sports.
All right. Again, that's Sam Knox. He's the IHSA administrator in charge of baseball. We'll have more on WRMJ and WRMJ.com in a moment.